All right, so fellas, hear me out. I'm gonna give you this little
Oh no, here we
situation
go.
I was in yesterday. All
Break it
right,
down. Break it
so
down.
I almost had a pretty severe dad moment. Like, it was close. We had a close
Okay,
call.
okay, okay,
We had a close.
okay.
I caught myself, but it was
Let's hear
close.
it.
I'm in
What's
the
the
deli.
evidence?
All right, I'm at the deli. All right, I'm waiting for my sandwich. I've ordered ahead. I'm just there to pick up. There's a kid in front of me, maybe 9 or 10. Him, his mom, younger brother. The kid is in a basketball jersey, but
Nice.
like not like NBA jersey. Like a he just played in his youth
Oh.
league jersey. He's got that on, right?
Love
Yeah.
that.
And I see him walk past me, and immediately in my head, I go, I should ask him if he won his game. I should ask him how the game went. And then I thought, I was like, no, wait a minute, wait a minute. Like, hold on. That's such a middle-aged man to be like, hey, buddy, how do we do, huh? Huh?
Hey, how do we do?
You show him who's... Yeah, dude. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
You put up a couple points, bud. You put up a couple points.
What position are you playing, huh?
Hey, you look like a point guard. You look like a point guard.
Yeah, you strike me as a power forward, huh?
You got Steve Nash hair, and I like it. You all right? You're looking like Nash in his prime.
Yeah, come on. What are you, young Moses Malone, huh? You start naming like old players. That's the icing on the cake. You can start comparing them to old players. He's like,
no one the kid
like a young
know.
Dr. J. You're like young Pistol Pete. You know what I mean?
Pistol Pete.
He's like, sir, who's those?
Yeah, and then start complaining about how the game isn't as good anymore.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They ruined the game I love. What's going on? No more defense.
That's what happens when you ask him, and then he's like, oh, yeah, but I drew a couple fouls. You know, and you're like, oh, that's the problem with the game these days. You know, you're playing the right way, kid. All right? You're playing tough. You're playing rough and tough. That's how you should.
Yeah. Yeah, kids are playing for the fouls these days. They're not playing for the points.
So like,
playing for the love of the game.
Hey, it's Harden. It's James Harden. It's James Harden's world. And we're just living it, right? You know?
Dude, yeah, basketball.
He ruined it.
So you went out and like bought New Balance after this, right, Spencer? Or like, what happened after?
I thought about it.
The jean shorts.
It crossed my mind. They're comfy, dude. I need a lot of pockets. I'm carrying around a lot of stuff.
Look, see, here's the problem, Spencer, is you got jean shorts. Well, I got blue jeans and cut them off. My mobility is through the roof. I'll just say that.
We are not the same.
Dude, my productivity is up here and yours is down here.
Dude, I literally dropped an It's Always Sunny reference on the work trip I was just on.
Sweet, sweet.
Obviously, nobody got it.
Oh, but yeah.
I thought about you as I dropped an It's Always Sunny reference at 6 in the morning at a hotel in downtown Indianapolis.
I want you to know, I don't know what the joke was, but I would have laughed. And I know that for certain.
You know what, guys? Being around you guys so much, I end up dropping like one or two references of my own. Never having watched fully the show.
Dude, that's so funny.
Only getting so far as the end of season 2.
It's crazy.
Possibly even a couple of episodes into season 3, but don't have too much confidence in me on that. I think my favorite one to drop every now and then is but her lips were very much in play.
That's a fucking classic, dude.
I think I anglicize it in my own way, where I'm like, but the lips were very much in play.
Oh, man. What a great episode. Fucking donkey brained.
Yeah,
oh,
dude.
Man.
Oh, man. Fellas, speaking of classics like It's Always Sunny, this one, not a classic. Doesn't come up very often. This is very much a cinephile's movie. You know, this isn't one that... It wouldn't be one where if I'm talking to somebody regular in the office, I'm like, you should check out the movie that we're covering today, which is Take Shelter. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 35mm Colonoscopy Podcast. My name is Spencer. As always, I'm joined by my main man, Giovanni. I'm also joined by my other good buddy, Aaron, who I forgot to write one for you, buddy, so you're saved this week.
Hey,
that's on me.
Love that.
I totally blanked on it. Sweet. You know what? We're making it work. We're making it work. Hey. I can see the disappointment in Gio's eyes through the webcam, and
you
it hurts.
You can see mine, too.
It hurts.
I mean, it hurts. You know, there's so much to... I don't know how you couldn't write one. There's so much to say. I mean, he hates old people. He hates the mentally ill. Yep. It's all there.
I hate pretty much everyone.
He never saw Killers of the Flower Moon.
Never did.
He never saw Killers of the Flower Moon. Calls himself a cinephile. Yet. Didn't go see the Scorsese movie.
Don't call myself a cinephile. That's asinine. I hate that term.
Oh, all right. Well, says he appreciates film and didn't go see there the new Martin Scorsese movie.
Well,
but
I didn't care for the last one, so.
Whoa. The Irishman?
Yeah, you remember that? You don't remember that? I didn't like that movie. I wasn't a fan. Okay,
you said it wasn't. You said it was overrated.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were like, you're not saying it's a bad movie.
No. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. Scorsese I'm saying
doesn't
I didn't
make
care for it.
Bad movies.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're not talking Scorsese today. We're talking Jeff Nichols today. We're talking the guy who made Mud.
Yep.
And yeah.
That's it.
I don't know if you guys perused, not the lengthiest filmography.
I think it's eight. He has eight directing credits, I believe.
Feature films. Not all of them feature films.
Almost none of them, actually.
Yeah, dude. He has something coming up, though, right?
I don't know. I didn't look that far. I didn't get that far.
If I'm not mistaken, he's got... Oh, yes! He's got something coming that I'm super pumped about. He wrote and directed The Bike Riders.
This is the Bike Riders guy. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Easily,
I know the movie good. It looks good.
The movie didn't come out last year. Easily one of, if not the best movie poster of last year. It needs to be brought up.
I actually haven't seen the poster.
Aaron, talk while I pull it up for GA.
Yeah. They should add that category to the Oscars, honestly. Best movie poster? That'd be sick.
That'd be awesome. That would honestly be pretty tight, because then... Oh, yeah, yeah. That's like a classic Easy Rider reference right there. I love that.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it's great. The movie looks great. It honestly does.
Real simple.
Yeah.
Honestly, interesting that you brought that up. I think that should be, that's a pretty good idea for a category, new category.
Yeah.
Best movie poster. You know, because then we can finally start getting people out of this whole rut of like the big faces.
Oh, it looks miserable, dude. It looks miserable.
You got to give people incentive. That's the problem. Because otherwise, it's just gonna pump you up with, here's the stars. Here are the stars. Boom, boom. Here are the stars.
Have you guys seen any, of the newer Star Wars, movie posters? They look like absolute dog shit. Compared to, the originals, oh my god, what beautiful posters. Yeah. Where you don't even see the actual, it's like concept art, even. Those original posters, and then even the prequel trilogy, they have their problems, but the poster is still really good, and it's like that kind of more cartoony style, where it's not really like exact pictures of them, but it's like mock-ups of them, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the drawings.
It's
by a famous artist.
Yeah.
It's by a famous movie poster artist. I forgot who he did Indiana Jones too.
Maybe there'll be a category on the 35mm Kolonoski podcast.
Hey, who knows?
Who knows?
Well, maybe
somebody's got to blaze this trail. Somebody's got to blaze this trail.
Somebody's got to be.
I think you're onto something. You write that down, because we might need to do that.
Okay, I'll take it. I got it.
Yeah.
Listen,
jot that down.
Got it.
Got it.
Nice.
And through God, anything's possible. So jot that down. Anyway.
Okay, Take Shelter. One of the first things I want to bring up, because I noticed it throughout the movie, it does an excellent job of creating this kind of unsettling ambiance. Mm. Despite the fact that it's almost all natural lighting, pretty much all of the movie is during the day.
Yeah.
You just feel very uneasy at the pace in which it's going. I feel like the way that Michael Shannon is speaking throughout the movie, there's just this whole thing, and the score working throughout as well. Where I watched it with a buddy of mine last night, actually, and halfway he was like, feel good. I feel a little scared. I was like, yeah, dude, it's kind of an eerie movie.
He learns what anxiety is right there in this movie.
No, so I think you're kind of on it right there. I feel like a lot of that comes from Michael Shannon's performance here, because the whole movie is basically on his back, obviously not just being the lead, but I put that down watching the whole movie, Michael Shannon was the perfect choice for this whole project. He can convey so much in just his looks and his like in his face and like I don't know the way he just does anything, right? He can convey a lot of nuance, subtext, feeling, right, without having to say anything. You know, you just get the feeling. Yeah. And that really helps out a lot because, you know, just like you said, like most of it happens during the day, but his dreams happen during the day too. So now it's like, so you have that connection. It's like, oh, it's not like you're safe, you know, and obviously it's happening in his head. So it's like, you know, whatever is bubbling could bubble up at any time, right? So it's very, I loved the choice of Michael Shannon after watching, going through the whole thing. Oh, I'm like, oh, that
I thought he was really good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dude, he's like one of our great like working man actors. Like he is like an old school approach to the craft. Like favorite one of my favorite Michael Shannon things is when the Flash movie was coming out and he had to do press because he's like contracted to do press.
Yeah.
And during press was just like shitting on the movie. Like, not that's awesome. He didn't wait for it to come out and then a few years pass, everybody hates it. He's like, yeah, that wasn't a great experience. Like as he's promoting the movie, he's like these multiverse films, it's just people playing with action figures. There's no story. There's no emotion. And this was in his, like, GQ career video.
That's so good, dude. But, hey, I appreciate when actors do that because I hate the fucking bullshit, like, the bluster where it's, like, during, like, the press tour, you have to act like, oh, yeah, everything was great on set. It was a really good experience. You know, a lot of people learned a lot of stuff. No, fuck that. Say if the movie was bad, dude. And then, but then they just think they have those interviews where they say it was like, oh, it's a great experience. And then 2 years later, they're like, yeah, this was fucking awful. Like, I way prefer when people take, like, the Mark Hamill approach to, like, remember when he was just shitting on the new Star Wars movies?
Yeah.
Where there's those compilations of him just going, like, yeah, it's, you know, not what I would have thought the character would have done, but hey, it's not my character anymore. Shit, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Those are
Michael Shannon. You said it. Michael Shannon. Every time he's in a role, I always think, man, I wish there was more Michael Shannon. And I mean, Shape of Water is kind of like the main one that comes to mind for me, even though he was in that plenty. But like, I just always want more Michael Shannon. And honestly, watching the movie, watching Take Shelter here, I'm thinking, I mean, be careful what you wish for, because maybe I don't want that much Michael Shannon. Not because he did a bad job, but because this guy's fucking scary. You know, like, give me some feelings. Give me some feelings. Like, I don't know. He
makes can't escape me uneasy.
Yeah. Just looking at it. Dude, honestly, it just, his press, and that's just like how he naturally is, because I watched his Criterion Closet video, and just like, the way he is, just like naturally, right? And he's in like a fucking Hawaiian shirt. And like he's got like a hoodie tied. I'm imagining the hoodie tied around him, but that's how I like see his vibe. And he's just he makes me so uncomfortable. I'm like, I think I would hate to have a conversation with him because I would just be so intimidated.
That's so funny,
dude. But he's just like, yeah. First of all, I think I've seen clips or at least stills of that Criterion you're talking about, Gio, and I can totally imagine like that vibe. I can see it. But there's also he had an Oscar nomination, I want to say, for Nocturnal Animals a few years ago.
They did
a profile on him, and he didn't go to the Oscars. And I think he won. And he didn't go to the Oscars. He was doing a play in Chicago. And night of the Oscars, he was just at a bar by himself, just drinking after a play.
That's so awesome.
At a dive bar, drinking some scotch, just on his own. Looks up at the TV, sees anyone. He's just like,
"Let me get the good scotch."
That's
tonight.
A throwback actor right there, dude. That's a throwback actor.
I'm jealous. I want to live that life.
I do too.
Need that life.
Rude.
Blowing off the Aaron, fucking Oscars.
Yeah, Aaron, you said you had a lot of thoughts on this movie.
I do.
So I just want to turn it over, wherever you want to go next.
Okay, yeah.
Aaron, what are we thinking?
I did not like this movie at all.
Whoa!
Yeah, curveball, right? I did not like this movie in the slightest.
Whoa!
I thought let me contextualize, okay?
Okay.
I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't think it's a bad movie at all, by any sense of the movie. Like, I thought, again, the main actor's performance really good. Jessica Chastain, really good. Like great performances in it. I think that the like the ambiance, the atmosphere, you guys touched on that a bit. I really like that as well. Those are two things I could say I liked in the movie. Other than that, I did not like anything.
Wow.
The cinematography, awful. I did not enjoy it at all. I thought it was I didn't think it was like it wasn't okay. Like fucking Evil Bong bad, but like it was I just thought it was bad. It's this like weird late like 2000s like style where it's like mm-hmm. like a lot of like close-ups but the close-ups like cut off the top of the head for some reason. I just don't get it. It's not for me. Like if you look at every like pause the movie at any point, someone's head's cut off in the scene. Like it's crazy. I don't enjoy it at all. Other than that, I thought the pacing was fucking horrible. The editing was it drags so bad. There's some editing choices in there that are just insane to me. I don't know. None of the here's my biggest problem. I know we've talked about this with a movie like kind of recently too. Is the flow of a movie is very important. A movie should feel uh-huh. like you're going down a river, you know? And sometimes yeah. there's waterfalls in the river and it drops off into another scene. That's fine. But also, you can't just have every scene drop off into the next scene. They have uh-huh. to flow a little bit. And this yeah. movie fails in that entirely. It does not, nothing feels like it flows. It goes from, you know, him, you know, talking to his wife about how they might get divorced to his brother just showing up. Who you're like, who's uh-huh. this random guy? And you don't know who he is until like until he's like, so you went to see mom? And then you're like, okay, it's his brother. Like, I don't know.
Well.
What do you mean? Well, okay, go ahead. Am I wrong?
I'm just going to say you are technically wrong because he's calling him Kyle. And the mom had said it was Kyle's senior year when they put her in the home.
Oh, okay, all right. So, I missed that, I missed that. All
right, you're just not paying attention.
Fair. But still, that actor was really bad. Also, the brother actor,
he was not bringing a lot to the team. You're Aaron. I agree. Yeah. Okay. This feels like a 90-minute to 100-minute movie.
Oh, there's this so is like much fat to when, trip. So much.
Not to be like the studio boss. It's like cutting it up. But if somebody comes in and pitches this high concept, not a lot of shots. Not varied cinematography, all set in kind of one home far out there in the sticks, and you're like, this guy has dreams, and then it's those dreams turn to apocalyptic vision. And that's kind of like high bend. I'm like, I'm on board. I like it. It's original. It's a new idea. Yeah. You got a great actor in there. This you got to keep it tight because this is going to drag. If you try and make this like anything more than 90 to 100 minutes, people are really going to start feeling it. And you feel it.
You really do. You feel every minute drag by, and like some of the minutes you don't mind because it's like, you know, it's a good. I like the storm concept as like an analogy for, you know, the schizophrenia kind of like taking him over. I like that as a concept. I don't know. When the scenes aren't flowing together, I'm so much less interested in that concept. And especially when it's taking that long. Exactly like you said, Spencer. I mean, this is one of those movies that the studio exec should have cut up. Because I think this could have been, like, a really big, like success had it not been 2 hours. You know? And 2 hours is not a long movie. Dude, there's plenty of movies that I watch that are 2 hours, and I'm like, oh, shit, like, it's already over? Like, what the fuck?
Flew by.
Yeah, it flies by. This crawls to the finish line.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I feel like in terms of the pacing, that's, like, at least the slow burn slash kind of, like, slow build type of pacing style was for sure what they were going for here, but... Yeah, like you said, it's just they overdo it. I think, I mean, I think at least from the time of, I want to say around the third or fourth dream, again, I forgot exactly how many dreams he had, but around the third or fourth dream, between that and then the Lions Club, like, blow up or whatever you want to call it, like that big blow up scene, I feel like that blow up scene came way too late. Like, by the time that came, like, it, like, I don't know, like, the time, like, the perfect time had already passed for that. Like, I feel like that should have come a little earlier. Than whenever it did, And I think that that whole brother scene, like, I loved Michael. I think a lot of the problems I had with that scene particularly just came out of the brother, who they casted as the brother. I forgot what his name is, but that guy, I kind of see him in a couple of things. It's just that guy. Michael Shannon, I thought, was kind of playing his part there. Like, I could feel, like, the uncomfortableness, like, the relationship with the brother, like, the... Yeah. I guess some nuances, some subtext there, right? Where you can read into, like, oh, okay, there's something, right? Like, some old family things, right? Like, just whatever this relationship is, and then as he's building the thing. But, yeah, I think just they dragged it way too much. Too much. You know, you can slow burn all you want, and it'll release to a nice, you know, a nice explosion, so to speak. But... it's when you tease it too long, it's just you get blue balls. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah,
you're luck.
Yeah, I do think part of the brother scene issues is that a lot of this is subtext. I think you're trying to toe that line of you want the audience to find the conflict, you mm-hmm. don't want to tell them the conflict. And so my interpretation of the scene was that the brothers are not close.
Yeah,
and it all goes back to that scene with the mom when she says, like, you put me in right as Kyle was going into his senior year. Michael Shannon said he was around 9 or 10. So my interpretation was that's a 9 to 10 year age gap between the brothers. Yeah. The mom's out. The dad is trying his best. But the mom leaves. There's all this drama right when the brother's presumably leaving high school.
Yeah.
So I figured, all right, these guys probably don't talk that much anymore. Mm-mm. And... because I knew, like, the Kyle thing, I knew it was a brother the whole time. I was like, all right, the wife is concerned. She's grasping for straws here. Clearly, Michael yeah. Shannon doesn't have friends. Like, I think we can all agree.
He had one friend.
This guy has one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So, the not it's the most day one that betrayed him. Gregarious of characters. Not a socialite. No. Right? So, she's trying her best, and so her only hope is to call in the brother. Maybe there's some... like, oh, the brother watched the mom go through this, so maybe he can help in. Like, he has that context that the uh-huh. friend doesn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to defend the scene as if I directed it, but
yeah, no, sure.
Yeah,
no. I mean, I think that all the problems with the scene are fixed if, again, that scene flowed into another scene and that had another scene in front of it flowing into it, you know. And then also the acting performance. I think if you fix those two things, again, I understand that's a really tall order, but I feel like that's just something that you have to be able to do. I've never seen Mud. I don't know if Mud was...
ooh, like, that's great.
Oh, is it good? Okay.
I thought we had watched it at some point for the podcast. I guess not.
I don't think so. No, that doesn't sound familiar.
No, we have it. It may or may not be on the docket for the podcast.
Oh,
but a little spoiler. We have not done an episode on it, but Mud is better than this.
Okay,
Yeah,
all
way
right.
Better.
Got you. Is it filmed in a similar way, though? That's more what I mean. Is it, like, the structure similar? Because, it's
the same kind of approach of, like, we're going out into a part of America that's rarely covered by films. You know, we're going to, like, Louisiana, and we're going to be real, like, kind of, like, out there in the sticks, Walmart's, like, in real kind of, it's like a minimalist approach, I'd say, like a nice minimalist realist approach, which is what this is. I think it's done better in Mud.
Gotcha.
And there's also geography-wise, there's a lot more you can do with Louisiana than you can do with Oklahoma. Oklahoma's tough. Mm-hmm. Like, that's unless, a rough one. Unless you're Scorsese, who just did it with Killers of the Flower Moon on location, Oklahoma. It's really tough to do. And even in Killers of the Flower Moon, all the best shots and sequences are indoors with the exception of one, which, gee, I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about. There's one outdoor sequence in Killers of the Flower Moon where it's like, we're watching one of the goats, and he just made Oklahoma super cool. But outside of that, your hands are tight.
That's Martin Scorsese. Yeah. What are you going to do? You know, he can make anything cool.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. No. I know, but I do want to get into something that I did really like about this movie. Because honestly, I'm right there with you, Aaron. I didn't really like enjoy the movie, so to speak. It was just like, it's like I can appreciate it for having watched it, but it's just like something that I would for sure not rewatch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For sure wouldn't recommend. Really, like how I could not understand the circumstances that I would recommend this, except for the reason of what I like about the movie is its representation of, I guess, like a person going through schizophrenia and like developing that.
Yeah.
And the feelings around that. On top of also like the how it plays around with that and his feelings about being a father and like just his feeling of power and powerlessness, right, that he has over his daughter's thing, you know, her going deaf and stuff. I really did love how they I guess showed him slowly developing that schizophrenia, or realizing that he might be developing that, or like and like his fight against that, his feelings around that, what he does, what he doesn't do, you know, all of that, like just starting from that first dream all the way up through to the very end, like to that last beach scene. Loved how they showed schizophrenia here.
Yeah, and totally.
Apparently, from what I saw, pretty accurate, or like fairly accurate. You know, obviously everyone has their own. It looks different for everybody, but for everyone who's going to have it. But it's apparently a pretty accurate portrayal of what it's like to go through something like that.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciated that, especially Michael Shannon. In his hands, it was pretty believable, and it looked pretty good. At first, I didn't even know they were gonna go a schizophrenia route, because like the dreams, I had like a note immediately. I'm like, oh, of course, they're like they're natural disasters. His daughter's there, and it's of course it's like his feeling of powerlessness over like his daughter, over this thing that's happening to his daughter that he has really no control of, except for like, you know, they can try and help in some way, whatever, you know, he had feeling of powerlessness, boom, right there. And then they go this whole like, oh wait, his mom had schizophrenia, whoa shit, and then keeps on having him, right? He doesn't want to tell his wife, obviously. He doesn't want to feel like he can't be like the man of the house, right? There's a lot of themes there, doesn't feel, you know, but then he has to act on these feelings. So he does all this stuff, which that apparently happens, like you like, it's like if you feel something is real or whatever, like you have to act about. And I just loved that whole portrayal all the way through to the end. We can talk about the ending later, but I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to talk about the ending. I want to talk about that, but no, I really like the, you know, because at the point in the movie when he's like, you know, like scared of the dog essentially, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, you haven't really gotten any of the info on his mother yet, or anything like majorly important to that part of the story, so you're like, huh, weird. Like, is this like what kind of psychological horror is this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are these dreams going to come true? You know, I liked that concept, like a lot. And then leading into the schizophrenia, you know, stuff later, when you find out I thought that was a great reveal, because the way they reveal it isn't like something overt, like his wife going like, oh, do you think you could be like acting like or do you think you could be like your mom or something like that? Like, that would have been lame as shit. But I like the way that they did that. I agree. That was really well done. I think the portrayal of that is probably the best part of the movie outside of the acting. But I mean, I think that ties so like heavily in with the acting and the performance of, you know, the main actor. But I love all that stuff. Like when he, dude, I lost my mind when he like gave the dog away though. When he was like, oh, hey, do you want a dog?
Oh.
I thought that was crazy. That was crazy, but it was also kind of like the way that they portray it is kind of funny.
like, you want a dog?
Hey, you want a dog? And then just cuts to the dog in the back of the car, and he's like, "See ya." What was the dog's name? Red?
Rex? Or
I think it was Red.
Oh, it was Red. I don't know. Something like that. You got two.
It was an R.
Yeah.
It was an R.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really well done. I enjoyed that part. I just wish that it was, you know, I wish those concepts were explored in a better movie. You know?
Mm. Yeah. I have a question for the group.
Okay.
On the setting of this movie.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Did it feel like it was set way later than it was actually set? Like,
what do you mean?
It took me a while to pin down like the year that it was.
Oh, me too.
Because like, you're not seeing like any modern technology. You're seeing a very, I would say, traditional dynamic between the husband and the wife. Their clothing could be any era. Like, really, it's just white t-shirts and jeans for the most part. It's timeless, right?
Yeah.
but then also, you ever saying like you didn't have your cell phone on you? And I was like when she dropped the cell phone line, I was like,
he had his cell phone in a few scenes. like before that.
But that's the thing is like, I mean, maybe like I missed some things, but it didn't feel like it couldn't. It felt like it could have been like
'93
or 2011. Like it really felt like it could have been either.
No, it could have been late '80s to early 2000s. Honestly, like
was it not meant to be set like I guess 2011, just like modern of release.
It damn well didn't feel like it.
Really? It's like I thought. I was
2011. How many homes had internet at that point? Like, well, I was more annoyed that he didn't look up like his symptoms on WebMD or something.
He did go to the library.
He did go to the library. Yeah. Which for 2011 is insane. Yeah. It's insane.
But also, I mean, like, yeah, I think that they're in Oklahoma. Not saying that it's backwards, but it's just like different. It's just gonna be. I mean, 2011. You guys. Might be tough to remember, but like it was just a different time, right? Things were just different, right? Things were just different, you know. Yeah, I know you guys weren't there, but it was just different. It's hard to remember, but that's it was funny. Just different time, you know.
No, yeah. Okay. Can we talk about his outfit for a minute? That is what I want to be wearing when I'm a dad.
Jeans and tucked in.
And jeans and tucked in, but half of it's falling out. You know, because I'm working. Because I'm working in the back.
No belt.
No belt. Well, no, belt. But did you notice what belt he was wearing? He had one of those belts where it's got the two pins that you could put in. So it's double secured.
The two-pin belts.
Yeah, the two-pin belts. It's double secured. Yeah. You're doing good. See, here's this guy's problem, right? Here's what would have solved all of his issues. He just needed to smoke cigarettes.
He just needed to start smoking. Dude, he was too good. The thing is, he was too. You saw it from the beginning, right? He had too good a life. God was like, let's shake this guy up. All right, we can't let him coast. Yeah. For the rest of his life here. He doesn't even have vices, right? Dewart, he's living it right. Right. He's struggling. Right.
Yeah.
He's hanging on by a thread. Right. He's alcoholic.
His wife's severely. Pissed.
His wife's pissed. Terrible relationship. They're thinking about a threesome while they're arguing. They're like. Can you imagine that? He's got it down because now God's like, oh shit, don't put anything on this guy. Don't put anything more on this guy, right?
Oh, Michael Shannon on the other hand. Let's take a look at his friend over here. Hey, that's a prime spot.
Oh yeah, yeah. We gotta put this guy.
Let's
through some
drop
challenges.
The locust. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'll put this guy through some challenges.
some challenges.
Yeah. Aaron, you're talking about that belt. You know Michael Shannon had to have brought that belt from 100%. Home. That's his personal thing. Yep. That wasn't in the prop room. Mm-mm. He made sure to bring that in. And right. Dewart, I want to give a shout-out to Shea Whigham. Just a classic character actor. Your classic character actor that's just, like, everywhere all the time.
Yep.
He's crushing it here. He's in Across the Spider-Verse. He's Gwen Stacy's dad. Man, such a random casting, like, for him. But he's there.
Cool.
He's a trusted guy.
Dude, he's everywhere. He's one of those guys. He does like three movies a year. Like he was in the Mission Impossible movie this year. He's just everywhere.
Yeah, he's a trusted guy. You know, those are the guys that come out. Like you said, character actor. He's just like, you know what? He's known around, right? And whenever a casting director is looking for some people, right? He's usually on the list, right? You know, like just some trusted guys. Just some trusted industry guys, right? Just been around, right?
Bring in Shay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's the guy who's like, he's the guy that would probably write a sneaky, great autobiography. You know, like in 60 years from now when 60 years from now, when we refer to this era of Hollywood as old Hollywood, like we do for like the 60s, and he writes stories about it, that's going to be kind of sick.
It's true.
Yeah.
He's going to be that guy.
See how the system was. You know, what was the Marvel system like? You know, just like,
exactly. And you want to hear it from a character. You don't want to hear it from a lead. You want to hear it from a character actor. You want to hear from the guy that was chatting up the key grips, you know, over a cup of Joe. Yeah. Exactly. You want to hear it from Shea Whigham.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Precisely.
Yeah. Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
You said you hated the cinematography, but we do a slap shot every episode.
Oh, God.
Is there? Do you have anything?
I feel like it wasn't that bad. Nah, it wasn't bad. It's just annoying more than anything. I'm gonna send you guys two that I enjoyed. I thought they were good. You know, kind of fitting into the themes of the schizophrenia taking over him whenever you guys get him, you can take a look. I think that both of these are pretty equal in my mind, so I'll just go with both of them. The one shot is, you know, when he walks down into the shelter, he's kind of center framed, but it's like the stairs are kind of the center frame, and then to the right and left, you just get black.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of just symbolizing like the hopelessness and like how boxed in his world is around this shelter now. You know, they kind of talk about it at the end of the movie where it, you know, he needs to get away from the shelter because that's like, you know, his focus, you know what I mean? And then the other one that I sent you guys was so he's on like the left third, you know, with this truck in the background. It's a really wide shot. One of the few wide shots like with an actual actor in there in the entire movie. And then he just sees the for sale on the sea container, you know, and he's so drawn to it when he sees it because he sees like, you know, extending like the bomb the storm shelter or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's just drawn to it and like he can't think about anything else. Like he was just, you got to remember, he was just like having a panic attack in the previous scene. And then into this one, immediately calm once he sees this. Like it just shows you like, you know, how he progressively is getting, you know, worse. And how much of his time this is taking up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked the second shot you have, the wide one. I thought there were some good landscape shots throughout the film.
Yeah.
And I love the way that they showed that area and how they were able to really emphasize the barren nature of where he's living, the very minimalist nature of where he's living. And also, I've like now driven through that part of the country a lot, so it's kind of cool to see that because you don't usually see that in films. But I would agree with you, Aaron, that there wasn't a ton for you to choose from.
No, it was a very not focused on the technical aspects of filmmaking. Like it was the director knew what worked in this movie. I will say that as much as I did not like it, I could tell that the director knew what he was doing when it came to the focuses of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't choose you didn't choose one of the dream sequences. I thought you were gonna go for like say like a shot of him looking at the storm at one of the storms, I guess, or maybe even like one of the bird shots. Always looking at the birds.
But I mean, this is all CGI though. But I did like the bird sequence. That was cool. That was probably my favorite part of the movie. If I have to choose a favorite part, where he's running and like, you know, carrying his daughter, and then all the birds are falling around. I thought that was cool. I liked that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah.
Interesting. All right, well, we're coming up on time, so let's talk about the ending of this movie, because there is kind of a lot to unpack in the ending.
Yeah.
Aaron, I'm already feeling a lot coming from your square on the
Discord.
You guys go first. All right, Gio, you want to get it started?
Sure. I mean, I feel like, okay, I didn't realize, I guess. Everyone has their own interpretation of stuff, right? So I came out, I'm like, oh, that must have been what this is about, right? Thinking one thing. And I looked it up. And I didn't know there was so much discourse or like so much, debate about what that ending meant. I thought, me personally coming out of that, I was thinking, oh, the storm kind of represents, maybe, it just symbolizes that mental illness, like it doesn't just go away, right after just one fucking vacation to Daytona Beach, right? Like, it's not just gonna go away, right? It's not gonna be like, oh, happy go, yeah, it's fine after that, right? It's a long journey, but now that the fact that the little girl sees it and the wife see it now, right? It symbolizes that now the person has the confidence to go through it, and his family is there to see it and understand it and kind of support him in that now, right? That's what I was coming out of it now. Like, you know, cause I feel like the whole thing was about just like mental illness, schizophrenia, right? A person going through that, plus all the, I guess, secondary themes of like, you know, fatherhood and blah, blah, blah. So that's how I was feeling. I for sure was not taking it. I didn't know people were taking it in like that in a little bit more of a literal, like not post-apocalyptic, but apocalyptic vision kind of sense, like I don't know, because I mean, I don't know. Considering that these were coming from, I guess, schizophrenic type of things, I thought that was kind of the main emphasis. So I was like, oh, clearly, like now they see it. Now they can help him through it. They're trying to get some support, and it's a long road. You know, it doesn't just like go away, and it probably will never just go away. But it can get better.
Yeah.
You know? Well, you do a real tricky thing when you have the daughter and the wife both see the storm.
Uh-huh.
Because even if you didn't think like of the literal interpretation, you're obviously opening the door. Like you want to open the door to literal interpretation if you put that in there.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
Seeing that, because like you get the parallels throughout of, okay, the visions he's having with the storm. The storm in like the time of him in his 30s, that's when his mom got it. The whole thing is like impending doom for his personal life. Yeah. But it's impending doom for him only because nobody else sees it. Like he's crazy because nobody else sees it.
Uh-huh.
But then when other people see it, I feel like it takes away from that. And I get that you really want like an ambiguous ending, but I think when you show other people seeing it, it takes away from the message that you were putting on through the previous 2 hours. That was my take on it.
Interesting.
Okay,
interesting.
I see what you're saying, Spence, but I don't understand how you could see this as like a literal, like an actual storm coming. I'm sorry, if you think that, like that is like level one interpretation of like thematic purpose. Like it because like Gio said, nobody's seen the storm before, right? It's always been him, but that's because he was like hiding it from his wife. You know, he didn't want her to know the full extent of, you know, how much money he was spending, how much like how much of a problem this was. Like he was pissing himself in bed, and he didn't want his wife to know, shit like that. And so, like now that she's aware and fully aware of the problem, and that only happens at the very end of the movie. Like, once she is in the shelter with him, etc., once they go see this doctor in Columbus or whatever, you know, that's the first time where she, like, has a real understanding of the problem and the scale of the problem. And I think that is represented in, like, you know, their trip. And I think that to look at it as a literal thing is, like, crazy. I don't know how you could... I don't know how you could see that as a literal, like, but I also understand that it does open that door, and I think for that reason it's fucking stupid.
I think you do have a point there, Spence. He is opening it up for at least like the that being an interpretation, whether like, you know, whatever like the director thinks or like whatever the director's intention of what it symbolizes is, he's for sure, that was an intentional, like, open the door, like, right, type of thing,
mm-hmm.
where you're trying to make it so that people can have different interpretations, and that's fine. But maybe, I don't know, I think it didn't end up having the most positive effect, maybe, in that sense, because I think, looking it up, I think there was for sure a lot of people that went with the literal. The more like there was people even that's saying crazy. Like that it was that the whole thing was about like that it was about, I guess, at least the ending specifically, like showing that the storm's coming, them being on the beach, it can show that like whatever can happen anywhere, and you can be caught off guard, right? So you can be as prepared as possible, and you can be caught off guard. And I'm like, so you're skipping the entire mental illness part of this, like,
so,
right, this.
Yeah. So like the rest of the movie just didn't happen, right? So
yeah,
it's just,
yeah, you know,
so,
yeah,
you watch the ending, you know. And that's it. That's crazy.
Yeah, it, but I mean, the thing is, like, film is a visual medium. You mm-hmm. show something that grand visually,
true,
it's gonna open up that interpretation. And also, just to add to it, the synopsis on IMDb is: plagued by a series of apocalyptic visions, a young husband and father questions whether to shelter his family from a coming storm or from himself. So they even call it apocalyptic visions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're going for the, or was this all real thing, a lot more than like you guys are saying they are.
Yeah. I get that.
I think it's wrong. Yeah.
I don't know.
They should have stuck with the route they were going, but yeah.
I could see that being like studio influence, though. You know, early 2000s around this, what was this, 2011, right?
Yeah.
This was at the time where, like, you know, the 2012 thing was super big. Apocalyptic movies were really big. I could see the studio going in and just being like, hey, like, what if we make it a little ambiguous?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, like. Yeah, like, Doomsday, you know, it's crazy. But... Doomsday Preppers were like huge at this time. Do you guys remember?
Oh yeah, I remember.
I used to watch that show. It was on the History Channel or something. Like that. Dude, it was just kind of fun to watch. I wasn't like interested in it, you know. But you're like a kid. It's kind of like, oh, like they show like them building. It's kind of cool, right? But
Y2K, it's fun.
It was like a craze. Doomsday Preppers.
When do you think the next one will be? Like, what do you think the next like big Doomsday thing? Because like, there's one every like couple years. Like, it's like that one fucking evangelist fucking guy that fucking said that the world was ending like a few years ago. There's fucking 2012.
I feel like Y2K, this isn't a big, you know, one, but you know what? We're going through one like right now. Everyone's like, oh, it's gonna be Civil War. Gonna be Civil War, right? I feel like that's not necessarily like a worldwide one. Like how you said, like. Yeah, that wouldn't classify as a natural one. I think maybe we can come up with some natural ones, but I think that's like probably like the big one. Like, oh, Civil War.
No, I mean like a date. You know? I want like a date that the world's gonna end. You know what I mean? I want it to be like
a date. I feel like you only get like the only times they've gotten a date was like what, Y2K,
and then
2012.
No, Spencer, you remember that scene in Parks and Rec where like the world like it's that cult.
Yeah,
like,
the world's ending. Yeah.
That's such a great episode. Like, a great parody of that. It's so funny. But yeah, basically, like, so, like, the world ends, right? And then, they think the world's gonna end. And then the next day, the head of the church comes back to, like, the Parks and Rec people, and he's like, you know, I made some miscalculations. It's actually gonna end this date. And then she goes, like, oh, that date, the park is booked. And he's like, oh, you know what? Another mistake. It's actually the next day.
It's going to be the next weekend, actually.
Yeah, next weekend.
Like, opening, he's like, all right, get ready.
Yeah, get ready. World's ended.
So that was a good. That was a good episode.
That was a great episode.
Season 2 ep.
It was an early ep. It was one of the rare early ep wins for Parks and Rec.
The pre-Adam Scott, pre-Rob Lowe era, where it was just kind of like a bad version of The Office. That was a rare win.
I believe that was like one of the first episodes with Adam Scott in it, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. So he already came in to save the day.
I think Rob Lowe more saved the day, but we can talk about that another time.
Hey, conversation for another time, but our time is up today, fellas. I think we've covered our thoughts on the film. Let's hit them with some quick thoughts on the way out. Let's hear the rating. This was my choice. We didn't stay up. No. Yeah, it was. This was my choice. This was
your choice, yeah.
I know, kind of weird, right?
Yeah, I thought it was Aaron's. That's crazy.
This is a very Aaron movie. It's depressing. Yeah, good job, Spencer.
This one was actually mine. So I'll go last. Gio, why don't you get it started?
For sure. I mean, not much more. I think I've already said my piece. I do want to state that, I love that Lions Club scene where he blows up. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really great performance by Michael Shannon. And again, probably the best example of how, or like the interpretation or how he interpreted or portrayed someone going through a schizophrenic episode and going through that. It feels like they have no control. So, you know, obviously it could be in public, right? But then it's over, and it's like, oh, you know, the feelings are still there. But yeah, again, I think this whole movie, I didn't necessarily like enjoy it. I won't say it's just like mid. It's like very mid. You know, I can't say it's like a bad movie at the same time because of stuff like Michael Shannon's performance, especially. The whole movie's on his back, and for good reason. Is broad shoulders and Chastain. I think she does a great job with what she's given. I think, again, you could see what they were reaching for here. Whether it landed on all fronts, that's up for debate. I think it landed on a couple things. Again, the representation, but on others, it definitely didn't. It didn't hook me. It didn't. I was feeling every minute. That's for sure. The pacing was off. Yeah. With all that being said, I would personally put it at like a 5, maybe a 6. But honestly, all those points are coming out of Michael Shannon's performance. I'm gonna say it. Like I just can't see myself like definitely not rewatching. Personal will.
Oh no.
And I just could not imagine recommending it. unless someone say someone wanted to see, like, someone said, like, I never see accurate portrayals of, like, mental illness and schizophrenia on screen. Well, here you go. I mean, if you want, this is that one, in such a specific scenario as someone saying that, then here you go. But so I think I'm gonna give it like a 5, maybe the lightest of 6s. The lightest of 6s.
A light 6.
Yeah,
all right. I did not enjoy this at all. Really bleak watch, which I enjoyed that, like, for the first, you know, probably 30 minutes. But I mean, it just drags so much. I honestly think that there's a great movie buried in this movie. You know what I mean? Like we said, all the acting really good, the atmosphere really great, like, scene specifically. But just like I said earlier, nothing flows, just doesn't work for me. I will bring up this. I thought this was funny. His pills were literally Tic Tacs. Did you guys notice that? They were literally Tic Tacs. I'm not even kidding. I
didn't even notice.
They were Tic Tacs. There was one other funny thing that I noticed that I can't. Oh, Busch Light. Just a Busch Light ad in the beginning. Love that. Love that. You gotta love. You love to see it. but anyway, that I don't have anything more to say. I've talked you guys' ear off about not liking this movie. So it's a 4 out of 10. I'm comfortable with a 4 out of 10. And again, like Gio said, all of those points are from their performances. All of them.
All right. Well, I didn't hate it nearly as much as you guys. I would agree that it's too long. There are some mistakes made with the concept. Cinematography is a little bit bland. Script, I'd say, is an average script. Like, there's nothing dialogue-wise. It's crushing. I think Shannon and Chastain were both phenomenal. I liked what Shea Whigham did and the little screen time that he had. And I like that it's a high concept and it took a swing. And I liked where it was set. I liked how, you know, you took... I like films that take a very high concept idea and put it in a very low concept setting. And that was what they did here. So I like that. It was different. And I'll give it a 6.5 out of 10. That somehow comes in as the highest of the day. But yeah, sorry, Jeff Nichols. Hopefully we give higher scores to Mud when we get around to it.
I'm sure we will.
We will.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoyed it. Till the next time, I'm Spencer.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Gio.
And this has been the 35mm Colonoscopy Podcast, reminding you of the importance of wearing a good pair of work boots. Just got to get those guys on.
I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. You need them. You need them. Mm-hmm. And please join us next week for The Lady Vanishes.